Everyone's in the same boat. So when we're matir a davar avid for someone to chalamayid, I can't tell he has somebody else to do it for me. He has somebody else who's also Jewish. He's also not allowed to do malacha. But when it comes to avelus, so we can minimize the issur, so to speak, by having somebody else do it in his behalf, someone who's not really an avil. That's what we assume, that whenever the avil has a malacha davar avid, so he's permitted to have an outsider, a non-avil, do it on his behalf. What if you have a mamish not shayach, he can't find anybody else, so then that's the shalom that we've shown him. So maybe we can make it for himself to do it. But in the normal circumstances, that's the cloud. That if it's a davra avik, so then an outsider would be permitted to do it on his behalf. But normally, to have somebody else do your malacha, that would be prohibited for an avik, short of a davra avik. What exactly constitutes davra avik? So here, a lot of the discussion is really a chalamayid issue, but the sigis appear in both in terms of chalamayid and in terms of avelus, what constitutes a davra avik. There is a basic distinction in halacha between we spoke about this in the Kibra Avim Sugis earlier this year, between Dover Ovid and Menias HaRevach. Dover Ovid means that a person is going to actually lose something. Menias HaRevach means that a person is not going to gain something. So Dover Ovid means that if they have my field is flooded with water, if I don't get somebody to come in and clear it out, then my field is going to be ruined. My crops are out and they're getting dried up, they're getting ruined. If somebody doesn't harvest it, so it's going to be a disaster. That's called Dover Ovid. Menias HaRevach means that I have a chance to make a few dollars. If I don't make that profit, so I don't end up losing anything. No loss, no gain. So that's a big question. Are there any grounds to label Menias HaRevach as a davar avid also? Pasha Pshat and Halacha is that not. That's not called a davar avid. This is a common shaila, both for Avelus and for Chalamay. Let's say, the guy says, what do you mean? If I don't go to work this week, I'm not going to get paid this week. So you're not going to get paid this week, so that means it's a Menias HaRevach. You're not losing something. You're not something taking the money out of your account and throwing it to the garbage. You're not taking your crops and throwing them to the garbage. You're not going to get the money. So the same way that you don't work on Shabbos, the person doesn't work on Yom Kippur, doesn't work on during the week of Shiva as well. But we assume that a person would really have a situation of a real bona fide davar avid, so then in a chinami, so then at least to have somebody else do it on his behalf would be okay, and maybe even if it's not feasible for somebody else to do it on his behalf, then maybe certain very, very limited grounds to even permit him to do it himself. What about to have somebody else do a malacha for him in the following sense, also pattern a little bit after Hilchos Shabbos? Let's say a person had person's in the middle of sitting Shiva and he has to get his car fixed. So he's not using his car anyway, now it's a good time to go get an oil change. So we tell somebody to drive the car up to the mechanic to get the car worked on. So that's not right. It's not a davar avik. So you're not allowed to have somebody else do it. Even the goyim shouldn't have is not supposed to be working for you. No one's supposed to be working for you. But let's say he gave the car beforehand. He gave him the car before he became an avil. And now, boom, all of a sudden he becomes an avil. So is he mechuyav to call the mechanic and say, stop, don't work on my car? Well, let's say he gave something into the cleaner or something beforehand. He gave shoes into the shoemaker beforehand, and now he realizes that he's in novels. He's mechuyav to go stop the guy from working. So this is the same halacha as the guy with Shabbos. Just as in Shabbos, if you give something into a guy from before Shabbos and he had time to work on it beforehand, and it's not nika, you can't really tell that he's working on behalf of the Jew. So then it's technically mutter. So too, when it comes to avelus, that if he gave in the car from beforehand. And now he becomes an avil, so then he's not mechuyav to go retrieve the car to stop somebody from doing it. So it's not clear, he's not working for the avil in the avil's house, it's not clear that he's really working on his behalf. So since it was efshar beforehand, so that would be okay. There is perhaps the most serious discussion in terms of malacha, the discussion that appears with the Gemara about it in the Bavli and then the Rishami about it. The Bavli and Rishami seem to say different things about the topic. There's a whole discussion about business. If that person has a business, so if he has his private business, then he has to close down his business. Unless, sometimes, closing down his business may be a davar avid. There's an Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says that, let's say a person has certain salaries that he has to pay. He has workers working for him. The workers, they're not going to take a vacation right now. So he's going to have to pay them money. And he's not going to keep the business open to offset the expenses of us. That may also be a gather of a davar avid. So that may be a davar avid that he himself is not going into work. His workers are working for him. That may be an example of a davar avid idea chayrush. Maybe more. So again, each case has to be sized up properly. Is it davar avid or is it minyas arevach? Sometimes you have a situation, which the Gemara also describes, a person's in business with somebody else. So you have two guys in business. Well, it's not an issue of a davar avid. It's purely revach. But the problem is that the other guy is also going to lose the revach. The other guy is not an avil. So you have two guys. They own a store together. So true that the avil is not allowed to do malach. The avil is not allowed to have business. Still working as usual. So the other partner says, but I'm not going to lose money because you're an avila. So what's the halacha? So there's a whole discussion about the Bavli and the Rishalmi and Shulchan Aruch and the later post below, what exactly the guidelines of in terms of this. So basically what the Shulchan Aruch says is as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says, based on the reading of the Rishalmi, that depends how clear it is that this business is really the Avil's business also. Let's say La Marshall, two guys own a pizza store. Everybody knows that it's Reuven and Shimon's pizza store. And Reuven happens to be sitting Shiva. So you're going to keep the pizza store open. Everyone realizes that Reuven's making money this week. So whether you make a deal under the table that Shimon's going to take the money or something, that's a different story. We'll talk about that in a moment. But if it's something which is Yaduam or Forsam, that it's a business, a partnership, and everybody realizes that you're making some money out of this partnership, so that's going to be a problem. That's how the Shulchan Aruch passes. The Mishkenos Yaakov passes even more than that, even more of a chumrah than that. He says that even if it's not known necessarily that you're going to get any profit, even if it's not Yaduam or Forsam, if Lamaisa, you're a business partner, Lamaisa, you're getting profit, that's tantamount to you working on during Avela, so that would be a problem. So these are very, very tricky shilas. May depend on the setup of the business, and maybe each case has to be viewed on its own merit to see whether it falls under the category of an aval not doing melacha. So because of this problem, and we can already imagine this isn't a problem we just started in America already, this has been going on for a thousand years, this problem of two partners, one of them is an aval, one of them is not. So the Chassam Sofer writes a tshuva that there used to exist a practice in Europe that the many rabbanim frowned upon, but the practice existed nonetheless, namely that when a person realized that they were about to become an avil, how do they know they're about to become an avil? So one of two things: either the relative had already died, but it was not yet the kavurah, so they were technically an onen, or the relative hadn't even died yet, so the relative was sick and it was a geisik, and they knew it was going to be imminent. So they would sometimes have the practice that the person who knew he had a big business flourishing, he didn't want to have to close up for a week, so he would sell the partnership. He would sell the business to somebody else. So who did he sell it to? So there were different practices. Sometimes he would sell it to a stranger, someone who he would trust, obviously. And sometimes he would sell it to his other partner. So what did he say about all these scenarios? So if he writes, in the hierarchy of things, so some of these practices were better than others. So he says, those people who are selling their businesses when they were already owning him, so Chassam Sofer says that's a terrible thing. Sell your business when you're an onen. Chassam Sofer writes, Anias omein lo hitiru, malachta mechiras asokov hitiru. The din is that an onen is not allowed to do mitzvahs. He doesn't make brachas in onen. He's not even allowed to answer omein to somebody else's bracha. So the onen is supposed to be his entire focus on taking care of the tzorchi ameis. So this is what the guy does. His mace is sitting there, says, wait a second, I can't take care of the kvura. I have to go sign a document to sell off my business so I don't lose money for the next week. Some services, ain't lecha b'zayin ameis gavul mizeh. So he says, Anias amin lo hitiru mechiris asakov hitiru. Some services, that's a terrible thing. So what about to sell the business before the person dies? Maybe a little bit insensitive. Maybe you shouldn't tell the relative that you're selling the business. You think he's going to die. But technically, some services, that's a little bit better. And he says it's a little bit better if you sell it at least chach to your own business partner. Why? Because if you sell your business to a stranger, how much a farce that everyone realizes this is that. Everyone realizes this is like a Mechir's Chametz. They realize it's just, okay, so Mechir's Chametz, what can you do? But here, you close your business for a week. So Chassam Sofer says, the best case scenario, if you're really, really, really not going to keep your business closed, make sure to sell it before the relative dies, and make sure to try to sell it to someone realistic, like a business partner who it's shayach that at least you're selling their business. And that's like the miyota ra. It says the Chassam Sofer, he was a rav in Preshburg. He knew that the oilam was selling even after, during the time of Haninus, and they were selling it to strangers. So Chassam Sofer says, how can we sanction this practice? So he says, if you want my honest opinion, he says, I can't sanction it. I think it's absolutely wrong. But he says, he's guessing the reason why the Rabbanim and different communities in Europe look the other way is that they felt that if they're not going to let the Balabatim do this, it's going to lead to a day of bigger mitzvah. What's going to happen? some sefer writes in a shuva that what's going to happen? The oilam is not going to sell the business. So if the 3 days are available, they're going to come crying and saying that it's a davar aved and it's a this and it's a that and it's a tzorech and who knows what. So they're going to find all kind of kunsim to try to be matir to do malacha. Then the oilam himself is going to go into the store and then because he's not going to trust anybody else to go, and it's going to lead to the day a bigger avera. So he says the some of the rabbanim in different communities in Europe just look the other way and said that this is the mir hara in terms of the setup, but in terms of properly, is this the correct thing to do? Some service says that it's not great. The whole thing is not great. The whole business setup, the whole selling, the business partnership, the whole thing, how come it goes, is not really proper. The correct thing to do is really to close the business legamer for the entire week. And for whatever reason that's not going to happen, so it's better to try to sell it beforehand than to sell it at least to somebody who realistically would really buy it like a partner. The second of the surim of Eilus is the isur of Rechitza. So some of the surim that we're going to talk about now are going to be relevant, I don't know, in terms of Shiva, in terms of Tisha B'Av as well. Malacha Taka is not really relevant because there is no real isur malacha on Tisha B'Av. The Mishnah says in Avi Pesachim the Mishnah says in the fourth Rechitza Pesachim that Mokom Shinogu lasas malacha the Tisha B'Av Osim, Mokom Shinogu Shein lasas Tein Osim, and Lugavi Malacha so it tolling the Fiat Minigam Mokom. And our minig is that in the morning we try to refrain from malacha, in the afternoon, so we're a little bit more makel in terms of malacha. It's important to point out that some of the chilukim in Tisha B'Av that we find before chatzot, nefer chatzot, none of the chilukim are medina, none of the chilukim are anything that's also on Tisha B'Av me'ik padin, applies both in the morning and the afternoon until mamash, till the end of the day. Only things that are tali and minhagim, do we differentiate between the morning and the afternoon. That's why malach, which is not a real isser, it's only a minig ha-makom, so many places distinguish the two. That's why sitting on chairs also is not a real din. There's no isser for on Tisha B'Av to sit in a chair, so it's only a minig. That's why we after chatzos we make them. So like tefillin also, tefillin is not also to put on shacharis. It's a minig now, so that's why we do it in the afternoon. The things which are really also like learning is mamash also nigra din. So you can't give a shiur in other things. You only give a shiur in these types of things. So rechitza is something which is also both on Tisha B'Av as well as on during Shiva that a person is not permitted to wash. What constitutes washing for these purposes? So the very famous Mishnah in the beginning of the second brachas, which speaks about the hetzer of istanis. The Mishnah says that a person would be permitted to wash if they are a very, very delicate, sensitive type of individual. By not washing, they would just go. They would mamish go nuts. The Mishnah tells the story of Irving Gamliel that his wife died, and the night his wife died, so he washed. So the Talmidim asked him, "My high, my Tana Rabbeinu, she'aval also berechitza." So he says, "Lokish aradam ani istinis ani." For me, I have to wash because I'm very, 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 very delicate type of a person. So what exactly does that mean? What kind of hetzer is that? So we're going to tell us that the yisr of washing during Avela, and Tisha B'Av for that matter, is an isser of tainug, an isser of enjoying oneself. A person is washing just to avoid tsar, just to avoid pain, so that's okay. That was never really, that was never included in the isser altogether. So the Rishonim points out that not every Tom, Dick, and Harry can just say, I'm an isseranist. I mean, it has to really be a muksak, to really, really, you know, everyone has to clean up a little bit. It's supposed to be really an isseranist in order to be mouth or showering during Shiva. The other examples of this idea that a person would be permitted to wash if it's not a rechitza shel tainug, so the Gemara describes if a person gets dirty, a person is washing just a lahavir as a lichbuch, so that would also be permissible. Some common examples, of course, of that are, let's say a person just went to the bathroom, wants to wash his hands, went to the bathroom, that's lahavir as a lichbuch, so that would be okay. The Rishonim extend this even to a spiritual lichbuch, like washing a negavas in the morning. The Tosfos says that's also okay because you know, physical lichluch. It's also lichluch. It's not a rechitza shel tainug. That would also be alright. But nevertheless, the Rishonim say that since this washing, these kinds of cases, like washing the Tosfos in the morning, those kinds of things, so we should really only wash the bare minimum. First, we shouldn't wash more than absolutely necessary. What's considered to be absolutely necessary? So the Machlekes have shown him how much of a person's hand does a person have to wash in the Tosfos under normal circumstances. Until Kishriyat Osav, until the knuckles, or until the kafayan, until the end, until the wrist. So since there are different opinions, so normally we try to be machmir, or be stingy with water, we try to wash the entire hand. But on Tisha B'Av, and Kippur for that matter, where we're only washing the bare minimum, what's absolutely necessary, we don't want to be nichshol in anything that's above and beyond the bare minimum, so therefore we try to wash just until Kishrei Tzotzes. This is washing, it's a little bit of water, yes, it's not, you have to clap a chet. You try your best. Yeshua Tam says, you try your best to wash the bare minimum. But again, so we're matir certain kinds of washing, whatever would be really necessary in terms of a lamait as a tsar, or lamait as a lichloch, or istis, those kinds of things would be mutter during Shiva. This becomes very tricky to Zman Hazer. This idea of istis may be more extended than it was in the days of old, for a very simple reason, that we shower much more than they did in the olden days. So the Jews who bathed every Friday, that was a chiddush to go to the bathhouse every Friday. People weren't necessarily even going every once a week, whatever. So we find this man there very often a person gets very, very istinessy during Shiva. Depends on how hot it is in the room, depends on what time of the year it is. I sit in Shiva in the middle of July, and the air conditioning is not working, and he's sitting and schwitzing up. So it's very hard to say that a person, after a little bit of time, isn't going to become an istinus. There would be mut for such a person to shower, even during Shiva per se. Again, it would depend. It depends on the case-by-case basis as to what grounds we would permit showering bizman hazeh during Shiva. Because again, during Shiva would be a real din. Because of the idea that we are much more used to showering than they were in the olden days, that we're much more note to lahakro to invoke the heter vistinus during Shavu Shachav and Tisha B'Av in the 9 days, the Ikra Din, although there are certain availus that are knowing during Shavu Shachav and Tisha B'Av, showering Ikra Din is not really one of them. So it's a minute that we've accepted upon ourselves to refrain from bathing and showering from the Shchodesh Av. But nevertheless, the folks can say, the purpose of the shower is lahavar salichlof, get off sweat, it's going nuts in the summer, so then it's mut. That's where we're very, very lenient with manazeh, which is not especially being lenient, I mean, it's reality. The reality is, it's hot outside, and hopefully a person takes a shower every day, and you sweat up a little bit, so just to take a quick shower to get the sweat off, so mikra din, that's really, even mikra minute, that would really be mutter with manazeh. Again, this whole idea of being more makil and these types of things all stems from that Mishnah about the idea that for a makam istinus, a makam real tzar, the Isser v'chita doesn't apply. When does the Isser v'chita end? So if you look in the Gemara, it would appear that v'chita is one of the things that are annoying during Shiva. Remember, we're in the first category of availus. Now we're not even talking about those things that extend past Shiva. So we're talking about things which only apply during Shiva. So l'chor v'chita is one of them. So pashas the din is that as soon as the Shiva is over, i.e. in the morning, I'm just a menachem, whatever that is, so we should be heptagom for the Avela to go ahead and take a shower. Nevertheless, there are more quotes in minute that we don't really follow anymore, but there was a minute that exists in the days of the Ramah that a person wouldn't shower for the entire Shloshim. Well, what is that? Shloshim? Shloshim is nothing to do with showering. So where did this minute come from? So no one's exactly sure where the minute came from. So there are different reasons that are given. There are some who say the minute is based on the fact that in the olden days, they used to have the barber would work in the bathhouse. So you would come to get your haircut in your bath at the same time. So since the din is that during Shloshim, that the person is not allowed to get a haircut, that's really meek for din to get a haircut during Shloshim. So it's like a gezeira, like a minute that started that you shouldn't take a shower, you shouldn't go to the bathhouse. The gezeira may come to take a haircut, that's what some said. That's the reason for the minute, then clearly the minute doesn't really have any relevance to Zman Hazeh. There's an interesting thing that Belkin point out. If that's the reason for the minig, so come out of a strange thing, that at different times during the year, when you're not allowed to get a haircut anyway, no one's going to need minichshol to get a haircut, so then the isser of showering, the minig of showering during Shiva doesn't apply. A strange thing, let's say during the 3 weeks. Well, everybody knows you don't get a haircut during 3 weeks. During Svira, everybody knows you don't get a haircut during Svira. So the barbers aren't there. The barbers didn't hang out in the bathhouse because no one would come for a haircut during 3 weeks. No one would come for a haircut during 3 weeks. So some folks can say, so that minig of the Ramah, even in the old days when we used to practice that minig didn't apply during Svira, didn't apply during the 3 weeks. It's a trivia question. When is the only time that there's a Hilchos Avelos that's more kal during the 3 weeks than during Svira than the rest of the year? It's this minig of the Ramah. Apparently this is the way, there's a story that's told, it appears in the biography of him, Yitzchak Chanan, that apparently somebody came to him, and it was during Svira, and they wanted to know are they allowed to take a shower? So Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan told him yes. So apparently one of the Tamidim said, Rebbe, says in the Ramah something that you're not allowed to. So the whole tumult. So I don't think it seems to Ovel said he asked the shower again. Rebbe, is it really true? You know, the Tamidim just told me I'm not allowed to do. Not supposed to. The whole tumult going on. So he said, it's mutter, finish the mutter. And he didn't explain why. So again, Nochamol, they asked him, but it says in the Ramah that there's a minute, you're not allowed to take a shower for the whole month. So apparently the way the story goes, when Rabbi Yochanan said, listen, if you ask me one more time, I'm going to take the heter back. So he said, so what was the heter? So the heter was during Sefirah. That Rabbi Yochanan held that the whole minig of the Ramah was only a gezeirah not to get haircut. So the barber wasn't there during Sefirah because he wasn't giving haircuts to anybody else during Sefirah. So in the middle, you could take a shower during Sefirah. Again, the Lamai said this minig is not practiced, is not a zer, because for us, even those who go the whole week without showering, so more than that is clearly going to be together istinus. There are whole discussion. There's whole discussion in the Gemara and the Rishonim about rechitza as it relates to tevila, as it relates to traveling in the mikvah. So the Gemara has a statement. The Gemara says that the ikra din, so a person really is allowed to go to the mikvah and Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'av. Chol chayv tevila tovin kedarkan. Maybe Yom Kippur, maybe Tisha B'av. The person is allowed to go to the mikvah. Why is that? That's not a rechitza shel taimim. It's a rechitza shel mitzvah. So that would be okay. So the Rishonim write, Tosfos writes in a few places that we don't practice that anymore. That we do not go to the mikvah neither on the night of Konidya nor the night of Tisha B'av. And the reason is very simple. Says Tosfos, what are you going to the mikvah for? What's the big rush to go to the mikvah? In the olden days, people were tummy, so we didn't want people to touch food that was tar. They touched care, they touched food, they mess things up. So as soon as the person was able to become tar, they were going to the mikvah right away. It's not as that. We don't go to the mikvah for two minutes tar. We go to the mikvah for one reason, only for a nito who goes to the mikvah with her husband. So with Zman Azeh, there's Nisr Tashma Shemitah on Yom Kippur, there's Nisr Tashma Shemitah on Tisha B'Av, there's Nisr Tashma Shemitah during Avelos. So what are you going to mikvah for? Well, what's the rush? So it's not called a Rechitza L'Tzarech. So in the olden days, it was a Rechitza L'Tzarech, because otherwise you're going to be Betamei everything. So therefore, it's not a Rechitza Shatayinah, it's L'Tzarech, so therefore you're allowed to do it. Which is not there's no Tzarech whatsoever. So we paskin, Halacha L'Maaseh, that the mikvot are closed. The only two nights of the year the mikvot are closed, the night of Yom Kippur and the night of Tisha B'Av. The Gemara has such a phrase. The Gemara quotes was one Tana who said that even Mikra Din you're not allowed to go on Tisha B'Av. And that Tana said a very, very fascinating phrase, an important phrase always to keep in mind. It was a Chanina ben Gamliel, if I'm not mistaken. He said, Kedai hu beis alekeinu la'ave tefila achas b'shana. They said, Mikdash is worth it to miss the mikvah one night. We don't even need that Svara, because we hold that it's not Lutzerich anymore, so for sure we don't commit from Tisha B'Av night. But even Rabbi Chanina Gamliel Bizman, even in those days, Rabbi Chanina said that Kedai Ubeis Elokein La'avet Tzvi La'achas V'Shana.
There's not because there's no Tzvi Bizman nowadays, because they can't
do it. That's a different, that's a whole, the whole Lomda Shashala place is different from Rishon told me that. Yes, we'll have to, yeah, well, so, but we have Tashma Shemitah, we'll talk about those Chumras that we have. Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see whether. Yeah, we'll have to see. Yeah, but the folks can assume that it's not enough for tzarech. The folks can assume that it's not a chayv tefilos, enough to be matter. There is another issur that applies. Avelus also applies one of the inuyim on Tisha B'Av. That's the issur of sicha, of shmir, of anointing oneself with different creams. So here also, the issur of sicha is also based the gear towards tainug. If it's a sicha shel tainug, it's going to be a problem. Or if it's a sicha for medicinal purposes, so that's going to be a mutter. If it's some kind of a problem that he has to put on a cream, so that was never included in the sister of sicha. There is a machlekes apotkim about what's the din if it's sicha lahaber saduhama. The purpose of doing sicha is to avoid a bad smell. You know, it's been deodorant, is that mutter or not? So during shiva, that's okay. During shiva, we pass the sicha lahaber saduhama as mutter, and therefore there are some folks who said that therefore it's mutter on Tisha B'Av also, because the Gemara has a phrase that the Isurei Tisha B'Av and Isurei Avelos are pretty much patterned after one another. The Kol Masha Ein Avol Yachal Asos Ein Avol Yachal Asos to Tisha B'Av. That's for the Mishnah Berurah, Takas Meikon the Shaila. Mishnah Berurah passing that it is mutter to put on deodorant on Tisha B'Av, because he said it's the same as Shiva, just the Shiva's mutter to sell to on Tisha B'Av. The only problem is that not everyone agrees. Other Echarenim for Machmir, and their Machmir based on another Gemara, because the Gemara in another place writes that Ein Ben Yom Kippur to Tisha B'Av. Ella very, very limited. I mean, basically, Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av are pretty much the same. And Yom Kippur, the Isra is even Lahavir Sazu Amar. So now you find a little bit of a strange scenario that Shiva would make a Lahavir Sazu Amar. Yom Kippur is also Lahavir Sazu Amar. The Shalos, where does Tisha B'Av fit into this picture? So half the Achmarim picked up on one Gemara, and the other picked up on the other Gemara. So like Mishavur's make, and others are Mach, but there are different opinions, different practices about whether it's permissible to put on deodorant on Tisha B'Av, or on during Shiva. So sicha would be mutter. We have sicha, which is really mamish for medicinal reasons. So that would be for sure mutter. Next to the isurim, which is also an isur, which is of course relevant to Tisha B'Av, that's the isur of ilas sandal, that a person is not permitted to wear shoes. So here, this really is something that we could have spoken about before. We'll talk about it now. That wearing shoes may be the one exception to what we spoke about before as to when the isurim start. But we said that. That our minig is, or Amos minig is, that all the Isuri Avelos begin at the time of Misa. So the one possible exception to that may be Ne'ilas HaSandal. So it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch that an onin is permitted to wear shoes. And the question is why? Mayai Manishtana, the Isur of wearing shoes from all the other Isurim. If you pass like the Rambam, that none of the Isurim start from Misa, so good, so then it's fine, that onin can wear shoes. If you pass him, like the Ramban, like the Ramah, that you're not allowed to take a shower during Aninus, so and you're not allowed to get a haircut during Aninus, so you're not allowed to wash clothes during Aninus, so why is it with the wishes, my height? So the Ramban, at least one day in the Ramban, explains that it was a special cooler that Chazal gave you, because the whole thrust of Aninus is that we want you to be involved in the Tzarech HaMeis, we want you to do whatever you can in order to be involved in the Kavod HaMeis, in the Kavura. So if we're not going to let you wear your shoes, it's going to be very hard for you to walk around. You're going to be walking around barefoot. It's going to be a big problem. You're not going to have not going to be as efficient as you should be in terms of the Tzarech HaKvura. So therefore, with the special kula that Chazal gave you, hey mama, hey mama, they instituted a special kula in Uchaz Avelos that even though you're an onen / avel, and you're really not allowed to do anything but wearing shoes, you're allowed to do. That's what some folks remember over, and maybe that kula doesn't apply with Manazah. So with Manazah, you wear sneakers. Sneakers have to be more comfortable than the shoes. So since this man is there, it's not a question of wearing shoes or walking barefoot. This man is there, wearing shoes or wearing sneakers, so then we should tell the owner they should have to wear sneakers. That's what many people do. Some people will come to the Levaya and mamash in sneakers because based on this Ramban, and others don't. Others based it's another day in the Ramban, and they give a different reason why shoes may be different. Other svaras. So yesh, other people who will keep their shoes on until the actual kavur itself. But those who have the practice of taking off their shoes, already from the time of Misa, that's really based on the Ramban's understanding that everything should apply at the time of Misa, and shoes was a special quirk that Chazal gave you, a special kula, because it was impossible otherwise, and that reason doesn't apply to the Manazer. What exactly constitutes shoes for the purposes of both for Hilchos Avelos as well as for Tisha B'Av? So there was a big machlekes of Rishonim based on sugyas Yevamos and Chalitzos and Shabbos, and a lot of complicated sugyas. What really constitutes a shoe? So basically, there were two different approaches as to how do you define a shoe. So one group of Rishonim said a shoe, there's a certain objective definition of a shoe, it has to have leather in it. If it's not leather, it's not a shoe. Another Rishonim said it's not true, that if it supports the foot, if it protects the foot, if you're walking in a normal way, that's also considered to be a shoe. So two different opinions in the Rishon. This machlekes was by Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av, and Shiva. How do we pass them? The Shulchan Aruch make legamrei. All three places, Yom Kippur, and Tisha B'Av, and Shiva, Shulchan Aruch make a legamrei that as long as there's no leather in it, so then it doesn't matter. It could be the most comfortable shoe in the world. It could be support your foot. You could gevalt. It's more comfortable than all the shoes, than leather shoes. It doesn't matter. If there's no leather, if the alocha, if the din, that's not considered to be a shoe. And others disagreed. Rambam, first and foremost, disagreed. The Vilna Gaon disagreed. So there are different practices. There are some who are machmer and Yom Kippur, not to wear even our sneakers. They'll just go in like, either mamshes in socks or in some half open slipper or something. And there are most people are knowing Wahakal even on Yom Kippur. Even in Shabbat Deraisa, most people are knowing Wahakal like the Tzak Meshachana. Again, but Tisha B'Av, everybody's making Shiva. Basically, everybody, I think just about everybody's making. Also, to assume that whatever's not a leather shoe is not considered to be a problem. Just as we saw by other things that when it causes pain to keep the Suri Avelos, like the Rechitz, the Sicha, when it's painful, then the halacha doesn't apply. Avel is supposed to be that a person is not experiencing pleasure, but to be mamish physical pain, you're not mechuyif to have. So too, if not wearing a shoe is going to cause you physical pain, then it doesn't apply. So the marshal, a person has trouble with the leg, that they have to wear a certain type of special medical shoe or something. If they don't, it's going to hurt the leg more. So then the halacha is clearly that they're not required to refrain from wearing shoes. They're allowed to wear the shoes even in Yom Kippur. That's not called a ne'ilah sasandal shel tainug. That's ne'ilah for medical reasons. That would be permissible. So let's say a person is walking baderech in a way where it's dangerous to, they're going to step on something, step on broken glass or something. So that's considered to be also considered to be a not necessarily required to refrain from wearing shoes at that point. If a person has to, because the matzav, you should wear the sneakers. If they don't have anything and they're walking in the way and it's they can get hurt, so then the halacha is that they're not required to refrain from wearing shoes. Yeah, so this is the shayla last night. This is the last night shayla. So this was so a few people asked me the shayla last night, right before Tisha B'Av started, that not everybody had realized that to bring the sneakers to the Beis Medrash from before. So we know on Tisha B'Av, the Ramban gives when Tisha B'Av calls out on the Shabbos. So the minhag of the Ramah is that you say Baruch Hu, and then right after Baruch Hu, so you switch the you take off your shoes, and then either you put your sneakers on, or you put your sneakers on after Meir, or whatever. But doesn't have his sneakers, so what are you going to do? So he wants to walk back to the bunk to get his sneakers. So a few people asked me, they're allowed to walk back to the bunk wearing their shoes. I said to them, I think that Ikra Din is okay. As I was looking on the, I looked at the ground, as I was looking at, think about the mud. The mud is okay. The mud is just uncomfortable, and I get hurt from mud. Rocks. So the guy's going to cut himself or something. I thought that the Ikra Din, the walk from, well, maybe it depends, I don't know, maybe it's more gray, I don't know, it depends where you are. But I was looking at the walk back from the Kolo bunk back to the Beis Medrash. That looked pretty rocky and pebbly to me. I don't know, I thought that was the whole Echbaderach to be master, but I deferred my psach when Rabbi Willig announced afterwards that whoever doesn't have the sneakers should get somebody else to get the sneakers, or if not, he said, he invoked Rabbi Chanina, Kedai Obeishel Okeinu, to walk in the mud for a little bit, I don't know. So whatever, it's a mitzvah shalom, whether you think a person can get hurt or not, I don't know. Can't say for sure. It's based on this idea that that technically speaking, that if a person is really a holich baderech, so he's not really mechuyev to refrain from wearing shoes. So the whole discussion that the Rishonim had about on the base of kvara, so, and many pilf people will follow the practice of wearing sneakers to the levaya, and nothing, it's a moot question. But those who wear the shoes to the levaya, and they're assuming that they're only going to take off the shoes at the Stimit HaGrel, at the time of the end of the Kvura, so they take off the shoes, and so they're now standing in the base of Kvura, it's also rocking in the base of Kvura, and they're going to walk back to the car, so when they're bare, just with their socks on, so what's that look up? So it's a good idea for those people who are wearing their shoes to the Kvura, they should carry with them their sneakers in a bag, and they should have somebody hold on to the bag for them, and as soon as the crew is over, so then they should take their shoes off right then and there, and they should put on the sneakers and be able to walk back to the car. Let's say they didn't do that, so then again, maybe the same shayla should toss. I don't know how rocky it is, how dangerous it is to walk those couple of feet with the socks on. That's going to be the issue. But let's say even in Bimsalomar, we're going to be mocked for the person to walk back to the car with their shoes on. Once they get into the car, let's say they don't have the sneakers there in the car with them, for sure when they're in the car, they have to take off their shoes. And they'll have the same shayla, but they get out of the car, going back to the house, then again, it'll depend also what the mitzvah is. So when we're mocked a person to take off the shoes with makom tzar, not a freebie. That doesn't mean that there's mutter forever. It just means cold mallet is a realistic tzar, so then it's a mutter, and when the tzar disappears, then it's going to be become usher again. There is a practice that the Maharami Ruttenberg is quoted as saying that over the imo, that a person is an ovo for the parents, even in the base of kvaros, even though it's tzar and they're going to cut their feet, it doesn't matter. Over the imo, you walk barefoot. Let's say he had a pshat in a certain gemara. The gemara is a lashon that al avi v'imo rata cholitz rata. I'm sorry, al shak krovim rata cholitz rata enu cholitz. Al avi v'imo cholitz. Cholitz means my boy cut. Cholitz means to take off. Cholitz is usually the phrase of use for chalitza. Chalitza is a minnow. So the Maharam Ruttenberg says, what do you mean? The gemara says al shak krovim rata cholitz rata enu cholitz. Al avi v'imo cholitz. What does it mean? The shak krovim. If you're sitting shiur for a brother, you're allowed to wear your shoes. That's not true. That's a din. So what did the Gemara mean? That al-Av v'imo, you have to be chalitz. The Maharam learned from the Gemara that al-Shar Krovim, If it's a makom tsar, so you're not mechuyev to tsar yourself. But if it's aviv imel, then you're mechuyev to tsar yourself above and beyond the call of duty. If aviv imel, you're not allowed to avail yourself of this heter of not cutting your feet. That's how his pshat in the Gemara was. You have to mamish walk in the base of kvaros in the dirt and the mud and the rocks with your bare feet. That's how you learn pshat. And other Rishonim are totally different pshat in the Gemara. Other Rishonim said cholot doesn't mean shoes. Cholot means chalitzas ha-kosech. So those are the first paragraph of the Kama has this. The end of the first parable of the Kama, they used to have a practice that they would like uncover their shoulder, like with some kind of a sign of a veil. You don't practice this anymore. So the Gemara says, Al Shah Krovim, you're not mechuyev to do it. It's like a voluntary sign of a veil. Voluntary sign of a veil. For a parent, it's obligatory. For a parent, Al Shavimo Chilet, you're mechuyev to show a higher level of availus for a parent than for a regular relative. So that Gemara, according to most of the other Shem, had nothing to do with Chilet Saminal. It's talking about something totally different. But Abba Bichain, because of the Maram, the Minuk, so the Ramah, the Shach, they quote this idea that for a parent, so if one can, one should really try not to put the shoes on, even if it's going to cause a little bit of discomfort. Again, the way to get around this whole problem is that people, the Avelim, should be instructed that they should take, either again, if they're following the practice of those people, who say you should wear sneakers from the beginning, but if the Shach Nisa, the whole Shal is moot. But those who follow the other practice of switching over from shoes to sneakers at the base of kvaros, so they should have the sneakers when they're mamish available as soon as the kvur is over, so then they should switch immediately.
What if going back to the bunk to get your shoes will cause you to miss some of the minyan? You have to be kolish right after barfu.
So we have to stand in the base medrash without shoes and trivial. That's what everybody did. I didn't start tying my sneakers last night after barfu. I took off my shoes and I davened in the sand. Yeah, I think, once you're, I don't know what's on the floor of the bunk, but whatever, as long as we reach the point where it's not dangerous, then the chalad ends. The next of the Isurim of Avelus, which is also an Isur of Tisha B'Av, is the Isur of Tashma Shamita. A couple is not permitted to be together. This applies whether he's an Avel or she's an Avel. It's is applied. Nevertheless, the Ikar Adin during a Vela, there's a question in the post about what about other things, other kinds of physical contact, not Tashma Shemitah itself. So, although it may technically be Mutzer, so it's not recommended, strongly not recommended, other types of physical contact should not be done. In fact, they quote, the Rukivega quotes on his notes in Shulchan Aruch, he quotes in Medrash Kehelas. It's got the keys and everything. The Kivega quotes the Medish Kalef that says in the Pasuk, Eis lechabek ve'eis l'rachek mechabek. There's a time to hug and a time to refrain from hugging. So he quotes the Medish that says that the time to refrain from hugging is a time of Avela. So that's not the time for a husband and wife to be to have physical contact together. Folks could have a whole discussion about in terms of the real formal harchakas, knowing the real, the official harchakas that appear in the Pasnida. So during Shiva, they don't apply. So on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, so we try to apply them. The Shabura quotes from Sapshara between the night and the daytime. The Shabura quotes from Shesvara. And then Yom Kippur, we should be more machmir, and in Tisha B'Av, we should be a little bit more makil. And he quotes from Shesvara that on Yom Kippur, when the women are dressed up nicely, because it's Yom Tif, there's more of a chashash. Tisha B'Av is less of a chashash, because everyone gets a sak v'efer. So maybe only at night you should be machmir in a chok, not in the daytime. Again, I'm not saying this is absolute Torah's psak, but if Fiyani is daiti, I don't know if it's not as bad, this chiluk really makes that much of a difference. Women dress on Tisha B'Av the same way they dress every other day of the year, so we don't wear sock for Eifer on Tisha B'Av. So, to say that there's any more or less of the Yitzhahara on Tisha B'Av than any other day, I don't know, it's hard to say. I don't know, there are different halachos about different practices. Again, it's not absolute halacha, but there are those who strongly recommend that one should try to observe in Yom Kippur, at least part of Tishrei, at least at night, basically the same way one would observe in the women of the Nida. So one thing that does, the postman do say that the couple clearly should not be sleeping in the same bed on Yom Kippur and Tishrei, those things are inappropriate, that would be inappropriate during Shiva as well. The next of the Isuri Avelos is the Isur of Tamat Torah, one that we really opened up with. Now we have to be ma'arich a little bit about this. Well, as we know, as at least we should know, we hope we know, it's because that Torah is our greatest source of simcha in this world. So therefore, the halacha says that in certain times, a person is not permitted to learn. So during Shiva, a person is not permitted to learn. And on Tisha B'Av, a person is not permitted to learn as well. Nevertheless, the Gemara does tell us, in the context of Tisha B'Av, the Gemara says that there are certain things a person is permitted to learn on Tisha B'Av. And the Gemara spells out a few of them. The Gemara says that a person is allowed to learn kinos. The Gemara says kinos doesn't mean we call kinos. It means echa. That was the official term for Megillas Echa. It's Megillas Kinos. A person is allowed to learn Megillas Echa. A person is allowed to learn Eov, which is tragedies. And a person is allowed to learn the Dvarim HaRoim Shebiyirmiyah. He's allowed to learn the bad parts of the Novi Yirmiyah, the tragic Nevuos. That's what we're supposed to Medayik. The Dvarim HaRoim Shebiyirmiyah. Kasha says Dvarim HaTovim Shebiyirmiyah. A lot of Nechamas in Yirmiyah also. Those parts the person should skip over. So those types of things a person is allowed to learn. So there, the later poskim elaborated and said, you see from Chazal, that it's not an issa gomer not to learn. You're not allowed to learn anything. You're not allowed to learn. So even though a person gets a little bit of simcha from learning anything, but afal b'chein, since the tone and the content of the particular learning that you're doing is of a sad nature, so Chazal never included that in the Yisr, both for Shiva as well as for Tisha B'Av. It's based on this that the poskim elaborated and said that you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av from the Yom of the Churban, you're allowed to learn Kamsa Pakamsa Sugyas, the related Sugyas, or you're allowed to learn Hilchos Aveilus, you're allowed to learn Hilchos Tisha B'Av, anything which the content is not a cheery limud, no person is permitted to learn. Even though the Gemara has this cool of the Gavi Tisha B'Av of learning the Dvarim HaRoim, the Gemara never says it the Gavi Shiva. The Gemara never says that you're allowed to learn the sad things during Shiva. So in fact, when some Rishonim say you're not allowed to learn, Rabbeinu Tam is quoted by Yaldusai, Taisus quoted by Kotlei, Rabbeinu Tam in his early years used to say that in Ovel during Shiva is not allowed to learn anything. Even the Dvarim HaRoim is not allowed to learn. Why is that? So Rabbeinu Tam seemed to learn, seemed to hold that the nature of the Yitzhak and Ovel learning is a little bit different than Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a simcha. On Shiva, so there's a bit of Hanig Dome that Ovel is not supposed to be talking so much. We'll see a little bit later about the Sheila Shalom and unnecessary talking for an Ovel. So Rabbi Tam said that during Shiva, so you can't say any different things. That's it. Finish, end of discussion. Now I learn anything during Shiva, even the Dvarim HaRoim. And then Rabbi Tam changed his mind, and the later Rishonim paskin against that earlier version of Rabbi Tam. Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that whatever you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to learn Shiva, so you're allowed to learn the Dvarim HaRoim. Are there any other things that you are permitted to quote unquote learn during either during Shiva or on Tisha B'Av? So the poskim develop Yisoy, the Rishonim develop Yisoy, it's called the Seder Hayoyim. I mean, things which are basically, you're not learning them, but you're learning, you're basically davening it, you're basically saying it over as part of your daily recitation of different things. Happens to be Pesukim of Torah also, that you're davening it, you're not really learning it. So the Rishonim make a Shulchan Aruch quote, so you're allowed to do those kinds of things, let's say. You're allowed to say the Parshas HaTomid. You're allowed to say the Kavanot, the Mishnah that we say every morning, be able to Shalom Shur, those kinds of things. You're not really sitting and learning them. You're davening the Seder Hayoyim, so that's okay. You have detailed, the poskim have detailed machleksim about, what can you say, every part of the Seder Hayoyim, or maybe only those parts of Kavanot that you really, everyone's supposed to be saying, but there are some parts of Kavanot that are more important than others. So there are other posts who say that these klalim are somewhat arbitrary. The basic klal is whatever you're saying, the Torah is davening. If you're reading it out of a siddur, you're saying it with Torah is davening. So you're not learning it. So it's the Seder Hayom. It's something that you say every day. So that's not really considered to be the type of learning that was included in the Yisr. And that's what many posts are making. There's a shayla that comes up, of course, on Tisha B'Av shayla that comes up. Or at least five people asking the shayla today. About saying Shema over again. You put on your tefillin for Mincha, so should you say Shema over again or not? So it's machlekes apostim and akotze lakotze. So some postim say you dafke should, the kids Shulchan Aruch said you should, because the Gemara in Bracha says you're supposed to say Shema with tefillin on, and the Mishnah Berurah says you dafke should not. Because the Mishnah Berurah says that since you're not yet to Shema, you're yet to Shema already 6 hours earlier, so what are you saying Shema for? Adam HaKar B'Torah, that's the Mishnah Berurah. Adam HaKar B'Torah, that's wonderful all year long, but that's no good on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to be HaKar B'Torah. So to say Shema on Tisha B'Av in the afternoon, it's filling on, is an Isser of Talmud Torah. That's the Mishnah Berurah's Pesach. So again, different Yesh V'Yesh. So different other poskim said, no, that's like Seder Hayoyim, you're not saying it with Torah's learning, you're saying it with Torah's Kriya Shema. Again, there are different minhagim about that. But the basic Isser of learning applies to everything, with the exception being of either the Dvar HaRoyim, or with the exception of the Seder Hayom. Then, as we mentioned before, the poskim have a discussion about what if a person learns the Iyun, both on Tisha B'Av as well as Shiva. These minimum basically would be the same. So the Bekei Yosef quotes that there was another Godel Echad who was sitting, I think it was Rav Shiva, if I'm not mistaken, and he was Mechadish Chedushim, saying over Teiras and everything, in the Divine Arayim, saying over Chedushim and Yirmiyahu and Eov and Chatavelos and everything. And the Bekei Yosef writes, I don't think it's right. It's really inappropriate that the Chazawa Mat, the Divine Arayim, because they don't get you excited, because it's very sad, but to say, it's a Chedush Teira. In the Dvarim HaRayim, so he thought was inappropriate. He said, you just learned the Dvarim Kipshutam. Who disagreed with the Bekei Yosef? That Gadol Echad. You get the impression he wasn't a nobody. I don't know who he was, but he was good enough to say Chiddush HaTorah, so he knew how to learn also. So he held, apparently, that it was a Heimon Vimon, it was a Chazam HaMata, the Dvarim HaRayim. So you can do whatever you want. You can say Shekhov is in the Dvarim, you can do whatever you want in the Dvarim HaRayim. We tend to be machmir in this. We try to be machmir, as we mentioned the Hakdamas of today's Shia. But I'm going to try to limit to we quote it from the Yerach HaShulchan. Opening line, we said, the Yerach HaShulchan writes that Ein Beis Medrash Bo Chiddush, that a person is learning, is reading the Gemara in Eilam HaGalchem. So if a guy, if a top guy never learned Eilam HaGalchem before and he's learning the Gemara, so find out the Chiddush that much. But if a guy, he's ready, he loads Eilam HaGalchem cold, and when he reads it, every time he reads the Gemara, he reads the Rashi, so he thinks to others, the Raya Brewer from Mechlekes Pitzchachuv and Chayodam and Chedush Mekami, what can he do? The Yerach HaShulchan says, Anas Rechman Patre, Nebuch, what do you want from such a guy? So we tell about, we should learn whatever, try to do his best to be Mamayit in the Chedushim. That's what we try just to say as best as we can. We don't say all the lumdus, we leave out the chayims, we leave out the fancy lumdus, we leave out all the rise, we want to try to keep it as best as possible to following the Bekei Yosef. If every once in a while we go over to the other extreme, Hashem Atay Mechaper, so that is like the Beis Halevi, famous Ramah, the Ramah quotes in the Tisha B'Av, that the person shouldn't learn an Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. So Ramah presents the minhag not to learn Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon, both on a weekday and on Shabbos. According to Ramah, you don't say Prakarabas yesterday, you don't learn whatever you would learn yesterday afternoon, you should only learn the Dvarim HaRoyim and Erev Tisha B'Av, both on a weekday and on Shabbos. So many folks can question this Ramah, both on weekdays and on Shabbos. And many folks can question on Shabbos. You're eating Suda Shlomo Kishaita, you're eating a Fleshik Shal Shudda, so you can't learn Torah, the Sira. And others question it during the week also. They say, Teichatei, so why can't you learn Erev Tisha B'Av? You're allowed to eat an Erev Tisha B'Av, so why can't you learn? Some say what the Ramah meant was, the Ramah was afraid if you're going to learn Erev Tisha B'Av, you're still going to be holding in the Sugya Tisha B'Av night. You know, after you learn the Sugya, you know, 7 o'clock at night, and then just close your Gemara Shkia, you're still going to be tuppling, it's going to be a Mishal. Halavai, we should all give everyone we should all be zeichet to be that have that problem. So for a variety of reasons, for obvious reasons, many poskim said that we shouldn't follow this minhag of the Ramah. Yesh v'yesh, some do follow, some don't follow it. But the Be'er Halacha quotes from the Maamar Mordechai, who says that not to follow this minhag of the Ramah neither on Shabbos nor during the week. It's a big Torah. He says, it's hard enough on Tisha B'Av to keep to the Dvarim HaRoyim, so he's helping for another 6 hours, the Erev Tisha B'Av to keep to the Dvarim HaRoyim. So the Maamar Mordechai writes that if it would be up to him, it's not up to him, right? But if it would be up to him, he would be mevatel the whole Yisra of learning at Tisha B'Av. They would make a beis in a gavel, they would be nimna v'gomer, and just be mevatel the Yisra of learning at Tisha B'Av. He said, because leave the day such terrible bittul tzar chazal instituted it, so they wanted people to be sit and misalvah in the churban, or to learn the Dvar Maroyim, to learn Yichaz HaVeilus all day. They wanted them to be involved in the Yen of the Yoma. They didn't want them to be draying around. So, but he says, Nevuch, it's not up to me. So he said, I can't be mevatel it. At least what the Ramah said, I can be mevatel it. At least what the Ramah said, I don't think you have to follow. That's what he writes. Again, there are different minhagim. I think around here, I think we're generally pretty makeful about that. That was the famous kula of the Beis Halevi. When somebody came to the Beis Halevi and said, the Rabbanim have too many chumras, we need some kulas. So one of the famous kulas of the Beis Halevi said, if you want the Shas HaChagov, you can learn Erev Tisha B'Av from the instant. You can be makeful, all done. You say, I think, I don't want to put words in anyone's name, but somebody who said that they should be zeichet to the Gehenim for the people who are learning Erev Tisha B'Av from the instant. Yeshmachom, Mahapyom. But on Tisha B'Av itself, enjoying Shiva itself, that's after the real event, so a person really should try to keep his halacha properly. But there is a Rishalmi. The Rishalmi says that if a person is so agitated by not learning, hopefully, we should be there for that. He's getting nervous, he's getting sick, he's not learning. So the Rishalmi says he's allowed to learn during Shiva, he's allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Why is that? The Nistin is the same way the halacha is that Avelus was given to be the Ma'it and the Tainugim. It wasn't made to give a person Mamish Tsar. when a person is so the makom tzar, he's an istis for learning. So such person, so the Rishami says, is allowed to learn on Tishbev itself. The Beis Yosef quotes it, and he says that he's not going to quote in Shulchan Aruch. Beis Yosef, because all the people who read all the Beis Yosef, so they can see this. The people who just read Shulchan Aruch, he's not going to quote it. He doesn't think we should follow this. But who we have is man hazeh. You got to have a good litmus test as to what kind of person you are. So tonight, after Avdalah, what's the first thing you do? Because the first thing you do is run down to the meal, so then you're not in this business. The first thing you do is, about the whole day I didn't learn, so you open up your Gemara and learn for an hour, and then afterwards you go and eat, and then maybe you could have learned all day in Tishma, so whatever. I may have been young. So the Ma'is and Shulchan Aruch we don't focus. For regular people, this happens doesn't apply. For regular people, we have to observe the Din of the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara that we're not allowed to learn in Tishma, except for the Dvarim HaRoim. They say the Ragat Shava followed the Yerushalmi. So the Ragat Shava felt that he was talking his business, he knew himself. And they say that he learned on Tisha B'Av, and they say he learned during Shiva. Ragat Shava, you can do it. If you're not a Ragat Shava, then they have to follow what it says in Shiva. Our practice is that we limit our learning only to the Divine HaRoim. The next Isser of... Yeah, there's a shaila about that. There's a tar that's not that Shem Mipri Hild is like Seder Shoyoyim. Because there's an unclear statement in Shulchan Aruch about learning the Seder HaParsha. The question is that going on? Is that going on by Chal? Is that going on Kisoli Bonim? Or is that going on by learning Parshas Meschanon? So the tar, if I'm not mistaken, holds that if you always Mabes Seder every day, one Aliyah a week, every day, that's like your Seder Hayom. It's like sometimes it's like some people in davening, if the davening is over, so they take out their chumash and they read that aliyah of the day. So that's like a seder hayom. So we usually don't. Yeah, minhag gives that we don't learn daf yomi tishma either. So those who are learning daf yomi either should have done two daf yesterday at chaperain tonight or make up to tomorrow, whatever. The next iser that appears on drawing a veil list of Shiva, which may or may not carry over to Tisha B'Av 100%, is Yisuf Sheila Shalom. So there is a correlation between the Yisuf Sheila Shalom and Yisuf Talmud Torah that the Gemara they connected to one of the things that's one of the things I wanted to mention about the Talmud Torah program Sheila Shalom, that there's a whole shaila that folks can have about the practice that many people have in a Beit Avel, that they learn Mishnayot, even a Chamayah in a Beit Avel, Ili Nishmas of the Niftar. So there are two problems with that. One problem is that the Avos sitting there, so they don't learn Mishnayos from Mekot, they learn Mishnayos from Mekot or something. So Avos sitting and learning Torah, not appropriate. And the second problem is that there's a statement of Chazam, a second smach, that ain't omrim halacha, ain't omrim shmu b'beis Avos. The Beis Avos shouldn't be learning, public learning taking place in the Beis Avos, even if the Avos not there, even if the Avos not listening. The Rav had issues with this minhag that exists in many places, that the Rav, you know, the Rabbi says the Mishnah Mikvos or something, the Ilui Nishmas the Niftar, so the Rav didn't like that. So the Rav felt he should only do those in Yonim, those Mishnayis, which are Minyanadiyayim or something. So usually when I get called to have to do that, so I'll usually try to do a Mishnah from Pirkei Avos or something which is relevant, kind of Halalomer or... Yofa Sha'achas, B'tshuva Mas and Toivim, those things which are the Rin Musar and Osiris, where even a novel, of course, would be permitted to learn those kinds of Inyan of the Yoimah. Getting back to the Sheila Shalom, so there is a certain relationship between the Yitzhak of Sheila Shalom and Talmud Torah that they both may stem from the fact that an Ovel is supposed to really be quiet, Haneg Doim, he's not really supposed to be talking too much. And examples of not talking too much are Talmud Torah shouldn't be talking in, and he shouldn't be talking in Shalom as well. In fact, the Rambam writes that just as an Ovel is not supposed to be involved in Sheila Shalom because he's supposed to basically be quiet, Hanegdoim, so says the Rambam Kal V'Choymer, he's not supposed to really be talking too much. Sometimes you have an Ovel, he's very machmed, he won't say Shalom, he's very machmed on that, but meanwhile he's schmoozing away about everything under the sun. So the Rambam says that's a real violation of Hanegdoim. Hanegdoim means that the Ovel is basically ain't no pelik, Rashi goes in from us. The Ovel is supposed to be subdued, be quiet, not supposed to be schmoozing about that. Doesn't mean there's an Isser Dibur, doesn't mean he's not allowed to talk about it. Things here and there a little bit, but the talk that an Ovel should be involved in should be primarily in Yana Di Yoyma as relates to the Ovel. This is, of course, an important thing to keep in mind for the Menachem and the Ovel also, that this is a person that to be very careful about, because the tone in the Beis Ovel doesn't become a Hefkevel. The tone of the Beis Ovel is supposed to be discussing first and foremost, the tzarche, you know, the kavod hameis, the yanum of hesped, and yanum of recollection, and reminiscing, and you know, and positive stories about the meis and the rechizo for the aveilim, and sometimes the yanum of halachas, the kavod aveilos, whatever things come by, but discussions that are totally completely inappropriate. So those really defeat the whole purpose of what the aveilos, what the new aveilim is supposed to be all about. But the formal list of Shaila Shalom, so the Gemara tells us that the list of Shaila Shalom applies in two directions. It applies that the Avel is not allowed to give Shalom to somebody else, and somebody else is not allowed to give Shalom to the Avel. So this Isurim of Shaila Shalom to the Avel, and the Avel back to somebody else, so there are a little bit of differences in here, in terms of the stage of Avel that the Avel's in. So the Gemara says that during the first 3 days, we said before, the first 3 days of Mochamar, there should be mamish, no exchanging of shalom whatsoever. Even if somebody gives shalom to the Avel, he shouldn't really respond. After 3 days, so then they really shouldn't be giving of shalom either. But if somebody gives the shalom, so the Avel can grunt back a little bit. But the Gemara says that the Yisr of She'el HaShalom applies even after the Shiva is over. But it only applies in one direction. Namely, the Avel can give Shalom to other people after Shiva, but you shouldn't be giving Shalom to the Avel even after Shiva, until the whole Avelus is over. When is the Avelus over? The regular relative Shlosh and Yom, and for Avel, you know, the entire Yid Beis Chodesh. The person should not be Shalom the Avelim for the entire Avelus, Hakal Nidoko, because of that, the Avel is not Shari B'Shalom. So what does that mean? So I said that what's considered Shalom for these purposes? So the poskim quote that the minhag ha'el used to be very, very makil, or more quote, people used to be very lenient that at least for the Yid Beis Chodesh, they would give people shalom, they would give shalom to the Avelim. So the Ramah writes, Mestava, we don't give such as, shalom b'zman hazeh. So the Shach writes, if that's true, so then it should be mutter even during Shiva. And nobody does that. We don't give shalom aleichem during Shiva. So it's hard to understand exactly what this minhag is that they, but some poskim say, as long as you don't use the word shalom, okay, shalom is Shema, shalom is Baruch Hu, you shouldn't be masking the Shemoshim like a Shbaruch to the Yavel, but just to say good morning and how are you, hello, things like that. So that wouldn't technically be a violation of Shaila Shalom. Again, there are different opinions as to how far this is. Why don't you try, at least with the phrase Shalom Aleichem, why don't you try to avoid saying Shalom Aleichem to a novel for the whole Yiddish Kodesh. Yeah, if the Yavel gives you Shalom, the Yovel's allowed to give you shalom, but you're not allowed to give him shalom.
See, if someone comes in and says shalom to the other
people,
or...
Yeah, so after 3 days, he's allowed to be mentioned. But he's not supposed to, it's the covered rush, he's allowed to be mentioned. This Isser of Shaila Shalom is a thing that Chalikis in the Rishonim, but this really applies in Tishbah altogether. Gemara never says anything about Shaila Shalom in Tishbah. So the Rambam has a Loshon that derech hachachamim or something, v'tamideyem, she'ein nosim shalom. It's a very, very powerful lashon about she'el shalom. I get the impression of the Rambam that it's a minich hasidur. It's a chumra b'yama not to give she'el shalom. Although normally we do equate whatever's also in Tisha B'Av is available, it's all the same. Punkiyat after the Gemara never says anything about she'el shalom on Tisha B'Av. But other Rishonim seem to assume that there really is an Issa Shalom Shalom and Tisha B'Av. The real Issa Gomer of Shalom Shalom and Tisha B'Av. So we try to practice that, or we practice the Ramah Chum, whatever it is, that we try to refrain from giving Shalom on Tisha B'Av. So that's a Shalom. What's called Shalom exactly? So we try to avoid wishing people good morning and good night. Is that really Shalom or not? Is hello really Shalom? That meaning is we try to. It's only one day a year, so it's easier. So to tell us to tell over for the whole year, you can't say good morning, that's already a lot. But for one day in Tishba, so we try to avoid all these greetings. One should try to avoid situations that put himself into the requirement to be in these greetings. So this, i.e., person has an important phone call to make on Tishba, and mamish can't wait. Okay, one thing. Tishba is not the time to be making phone calls, not the time to be schmoozing, it's not the time to be involved in these kinds of quasi shel shalom types of things, which whether they're also mikra din or they're just inappropriate in Tisha B'Av doesn't really make much of a difference. They're things that clearly shouldn't be done. There are other things that are after Chatzot also the meaning is not Shalom. So according to some Rishonim, it's a real issue with Shalom and Tisha B'Av. So we try not to. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. there are other things that are, like, I guess we can call them lack of a better, like toldos of Sheila Shalom, other things that are also quasi like Sheila Shalom, that the supposed to say one is not supposed to do, one is not supposed to send gifts. It's also considered to be like a Sheila Shalom. But one shouldn't really send a gift to an Ovo for the entire year. But technically speaking, based on that Svara, so really an Ovo would be able to send gifts to you, because the Isra for the Ovo is only during Shiva. After Shiva, the Ovo is allowed to be Shalom. So some of the folks can say, if they give you a gift, it's like worse than Shalom Shalom. I never really understood that. It doesn't say anywhere in the Gemara you're not allowed to give a gift. It says in the Gemara you're not allowed to give Shalom, and the Rishonim extend that giving gifts, that's like a form of Shalom Shalom. So somehow this becomes more Chomer, in a sense, than real Shalom Shalom. It's hard exactly to understand. But that's what we refrain, that an Ovo refrains, see, this Mahosh Loshim, or for the Imam for the entire Beit Chodesh, so an Ovo refrains from giving gifts and from receiving gifts. So the area of Halacha that most people are familiar with this is Hilchos Purim, that the folks can discuss about sending Shalach Manos to an Ovo. The folks can say, you really shouldn't. We shouldn't send Shalach Manos to an Ovo. What about an Ovo sending Shalach Manos? So here is a little stuck, because it's not really a din. It's not an absolute issa for the Ovel to send Shalach Manos, and he has a mitzvah, the Kabbalah, from Shalach Manos important. So what's he going to do? The folks can say, so whatever is the bare minimum necessary to give Shalach to fulfill the mitzvah, that he's allowed to do. So let's say, if I'm not an Ovel, so why should I pick my one Shalach Manos? Shalach Manos, you only have to give two Manos to one person. So why should I pick my Shalach Manos to give to the guy who's an Ovel and give it to somebody else? So whereas the Ovel, he is the Ovel, so what's he going to do? So he has to give it to somebody. So therefore, the Ovel is allowed to give a Shalach Manos. To many people, you only give one Shalach Manos, and whereas I'm not an Avel, so I shouldn't give the Shalach Manos to the Avel. Let's say I'm in a desert island, so to me and the Avel, no choice. In order to fulfill my mitzvah, I have to give him a Shalach Manos. There's a Shaila in the later Poskim as to a very common Shaila. A family is giving Shalach Manos. One family, cones are giving to the Levites Shalach Manos. I'm not giving to the Avel, I'm not giving to Mr. Kohn, I'm giving to Mrs. Kohn. So our family is giving to Mrs. Kohn, Shalach Manos. So is that appropriate or not? So, Rabbi Yashiv was Mekel. There's a quote that is quoted in one of the Svarim of Zavela from Rabbi Yashiv, who was Mekel. And others didn't like that. What was your father's meeting with you? I remember a few years ago I heard from him, and maybe before that Pesach Rabbi Yashiv was before some, so he didn't like it, but I don't know, maybe changed it, I don't know. I'm not sure. Based on this idea of the Sheila Shalom, the extended Sheila Shalom, the giving of gifts, the folks who discuss inviting people who are availing over, this is a very, very tricky area, because if you follow this to its logical conclusion, so then, for the whole year based Chodesh, you can never invite Avon Mamash, can't go out at all for the whole year based Chodesh. So sometimes this could be very, very difficult. Sometimes the women should be gathered in it sometimes. Especially when you're dealing with younger people, it could be very, very difficult. But it's not an Issa Gomer to invite an Ovel over. Some folks can have this Issa, other folks don't have this Issa. So I think that each case has to be a case-by-case basis to see. Sometimes Rav may feel that the necessity of the situation, give the Avinim a little bit of a breather, may necessitate a little bit of inviting here and there. So again, each case has to be, not everyone even has, not all communities even have this minute, but even within those places that have this minute, it would have to be looked at in a certain degree, case by case basis.
What is it?
What is it? What's the answer? It's like sending them gifts, the same way inviting them for a meal, from giving them food. That's the folks who say. Those folks who have a sister, it's hard. Nah, those folks who have a sister. Yeah, that kind of, that's not Sheila Shalom, that's just pushing for them, giving them what to eat. But here, this is more of a socialization type of thing. It's like an extension of the socialization type of thing. There is another Isser of Avelos that we don't really have this Zman Hazeh, and that's the Isser of Atitas HaRosh, the requirement really of Atitas HaRosh. And the Gemara says that an Ovel is based on a Pasuk, the Pasuk in Chumash by Mitzorah, which maybe is part of the source for this, that an Ovel is mechuyev to do Atitas HaRosh, and he has to cover over his head in a very sad type of a way. The Gemara speaks about Atitas Yishma'elim, that he has to cover his head, mostly like the Arabs go. Chassidus remember that phrase Yishma'elim, but it appears in Moed Katan in the context of Atitas HaRosh. So the Rishonim write that we don't do Atitas HaRosh anymore. Why don't we do Atitas HaRosh anymore? So the reason that's generally given is that it looks like a joke, that especially in the Ashkenazi countries, that who went with the headgear like the Arab Peter Ishmaelim, a joke that's sitting in the middle of Poland, you know, you put a kaffi on and put it around his head. It's gonna invoke more of a laughter than a seriousness. And the whole idea of a Tikkun HaRosh is supposed to be for Kavod Rosh, so therefore our meaning is that we don't do it anymore. What kind of halach is that? That because it's a joke, so therefore we don't do it anymore. It's a strange vart. I think what the Rishonim are telling us is the Yisoid and also Tavelos, that because Tavelos, true, there are mice and it's just there are details that have to be done, but it has to create a certain frame of mind. And if the observing of the particular pradam that halacha is going to have the exact opposite conclusion, it's going to lead Lidei Leitzonos. Everyone's going to say, yes, the guy's walking around with a Tikkun HaRosh. It's going to lead Lidei more of a Leitzonos than a covered Rosh. So then, forget it. Hilchos Avelos requires you not to do it, in effect. I mean, it's not that we're violating the halacha. The halacha group of built into Hilchos Avelos is the fact that it has to be to have something that's going to accomplish the purpose. So I think this is probably the reason why there's a very strange minhag that appears in some of the other Ramakot, this minhag in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, that sometimes the Jews would have to go to work. So you had to work on Tisha B'Av, so in the afternoon for sure. So the Jews would be working with the Goyim, and they would have to take off their shoes. So again, you didn't have the option of wearing sneakers. It was either you walk around barefoot, or you walk around socks or in shoes. So whenever the Jews would be working together with the Goyim, they would wear shoes on Tisha B'Av. So the Ramah says, my high, they would wear shoes on Tisha B'Av. The Goyim are laughing at us. They're laughing at us, so therefore you're allowed to wear shoes on Tisha B'Av. What are they laughing at us? The Mishabur calls them on the puzzle. They laugh at us for Shabbos and Kashrus and Yom Tov and everything else. So all of a sudden it bothers us, they're laughing at us. So I think the Pshat is a lumbus. The Pshat is that if they're laughing at us, we're trying to do something serious on Tisha B'Av, and it's causing a big joke. So it defeats the whole purpose of Tisha B'Av. So again, I don't know how far this Yisrael would go, but in this particular context, that seems to have been the minhag in some places in Europe, that they would let the Jews wear their shoes because of it shouldn't lead to this joke. So this maybe has its root in the people of Harosh. the next din that appears in Hilchos Avelos, which also doesn't really apply to Zman Hazeh, is Kviyas Hamita. Kviyas Hamita for the Gemara, the Shach is a minhag. That you should wear, even though we don't do real Tikkun HaRosh, you should wear your hat low. You shouldn't wear it like back, like a guy who's davening, you know, with a tefillah. You should wear it, you know, with a covered rosh, like in a serious way. Those who have a minute to do that, so they'll do that. I've seen Takasama Anoshim Chashuvim who sat the entire Shiva sitting with their hat on, mamish, like the Shach. I've seen other Anoshim Chashuvim who, even though they wear hats for davening, they don't sit in where the hats from Shiva. Yesh, different than others. So Kviyas Hamita, the Gemara says that you have to flip over all the beds in the house. You turn the beds upside down, and you have to sleep on the mita, which is Kfuya. So it's interesting that Kviyas Hamita has the most longest in terms of all the Isuri Avelos. Actually, we didn't even do Kviyas Hamita anymore for a variety of reasons, but those who want after Tisha B'Av can look up the Priska Rav, and the longest with Kviyas Hamita. The Rav has a shtickle Torah on Kviyas Hamita, and the longest, and they did it in the Gavra, they did it in the Chepta, they did it in the Bayis, and a lot of lumbus in terms of Kviyas Hamita. But the Tachas, we don't do it anymore. Why don't we do Kviyas Hamita? So the reason why we don't do Kviyas Hamita is a variety of reasons. So one of the reasons is that our mitas that Rishonim described, our mitas are not the same as the mitas of old. Somebody you're going to do Kviyas, it's not going to do a good job. I'll say the honest truth, I don't know what the mitas look like in old. I'm not sure what exactly they try to describe the differences. I don't know exactly what they say. Another reason they say is based on the Masechet Smachos. The Masechet Smachos says that if a person is in a funda, a person's in a hotel, if he's sitting Shiva, he's not in his own home, he's on the road somewhere, he's sitting Shiva, so the Masechet Smachos says he should not be cut for the mitzvah. Why not? The Masechet Smachos says because we're afraid that the goyim who are around in the inn, I think he's up to something no good, I think it's through some kishuf, some witchcraft or something, some sugar, and turning the beds upside down, and who knows what's going on there. They're going to start to get very nervous, so therefore you shouldn't do it. So the Rishonim write, and in the olden days when the Jews lived by themselves, and I'm the Vadaj Yishkol, so they didn't have goyim walking around the houses, so there was nothing to worry about. So all the Jews knew, you turn around the meat and finish. Went to what of Kishuf. We have non-Jewish help in the house, we have non-Jewish neighbors who come in to visit us, and they see this should take a thing of the beds upside down, so who knows what's going to happen. It's like the case of the Punda from the Seventh Muffin. So again, it's hard, you know, exactly to understand. I don't know, in America, 2005, anyone sees your bed upside down, I think maybe you're crazy, but I don't even think that you're doing Kishuf, and the reasons of the Svaras, I don't know, whatever it is, we don't do Kriya Samhita. So what do we do? Do we do anything that resembles Kriya Samhita, any Zeich, any Mashu, has something to do with Kriya Samhita, some Shaykh is a Kriya Samhita anymore? So there are two possible things that may have their roots in Kriya Samhita. So one is the minig of covering the mirrors. So this is a famous minig. This is even something that people don't know anything about it's available, so everybody knows it's to cover the mirrors. This is even something in the New York Times. After Rabin was killed, and there was a whole store at the New York Times, everyone was talking about Shiva, the Halo, it was an international thing. Those remember the headlines. So there was a whole story done in the New York Times about Shiva, about Jewish practices of mourning. So whoever they interviewed, I don't know who they interviewed exactly, the person was trying to give a flavor as to what are, you know, the real practices of Shiva that Jewish law requires. And what was first and foremost was covering the mirrors. That was the first. So the mirrors doesn't say in the Gemara, doesn't say in the Rishon, doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch. The minhag that exists in our communities, we'll have to see where it comes from, but I wouldn't put this as the first and foremost in the Hilchos Avelut. The other thing that was listed there was that Avol, not allowed to leave the house at all during Shiva. We have to see, and a little bit later we'll see, it's not always, that's not really true either, may find out also halacha, we'll see about that. So where does covering the mirrors come from? My high. Allah says in other contexts, minhag avasei tairi, where did it come from? So this idea appears both in the Tshuvas Chacham Sofer, and the Rav said this over also, that they both came to this conclusion, that they think that this is a throwback to Kriya Samhita. Kriya Samhita, no Kriya Samhita. The Gemara says, why in the world did Chazal enter Kriya Samhita? It's wild. Rechita we understand, Sikha we understand, Talmud Torah, everything we understand. What is Kriya Samhita accomplished exactly? So the Gemara says that Kriya Samhita wasn't because it's more less comfortable. That wasn't the point of Kriya Samhita. The Gemara says that Kriya Samhita is to symbolize that the Tzelem Elohim was just taken out of this world. A person comes into existence, an event takes place. So if a human being comes into existence in a bed, if the human being leaves the world to mark that departure, you kaifa the mita, you turn the bed upside down to indicate that the Tzelem Elohim has been taken away from the world. So we don't do Kriya Samhita for whatever technical reason, with the Kishuf, with the different band, whatever the Lamdas, the Svaras are, whatever they are, we don't do it. But the idea is a beautiful idea. You really want to invoke this idea that the Kadosh Baruch Hu has removed the Tzelem Elohim. So what could we possibly do to be such a little bit of a zecher for this notion that the Tzelem Elohim has been removed? Cover your face. When you cover your face, show up in the mirror. You know, there's no mirror in the base level. Some who have the custom of taking down the pictures also. That's that minute that some communities that take the pictures away of all the people. It's also supposed to be or at least the pictures of the mace, some people do, but it's supposed to be part of that minute. And there's a throwback to the minute of to the din of Kriya Samhita, according to these Gedolim. Is there anything else that we have that's related to the idea of Kriya Samhita? There's a whole discussion in the Gemara, the end of my Katan, about an Avel sitting on a mitzvah. Besides the mitzvah of Kriya Samhita, the din of Kriya Samhita, is there anything wrong with an Avel sitting on her side, a regular mitzvah, on a regular chair? Is an Avel required to sit on the floor? Is there such a halacha now? So there's a Gemara in my Katan that seems to say that there is. Some Hashem didn't have that gear stuff, so there's a shaila what the Gemara meant exactly. At the end of the day, it's not clear what exactly is this chiyuv of quote unquote sitting on the floor. It's quite possible that it may not really be such a chiyuv. It's quite possible, even for an avel, there's no real issur against sitting on a bed. There's a mitzvah of doing kriyas hamita, so when he sleeps, he should be sitting on the mita kfuya. But during the day, if he wants to sit on other types of things, it could be that's not also. according to the way some Rishonim learned, that Bishas Nicham Aveilim is supposed to be on the floor. That's the Pasuk Iyov, that his friends came and they sat down with him on the floor, Bishas Nicham Aveilim. Maybe this man is there, we're not such good Menachem Aveilim, we don't do such good Nicham. So for a variety of reasons, it's quite possible that even if there was ever such a din of sitting on the floor, which may never exist at all together, could be it doesn't even apply this man is there, the economic din, there's really no Isser for an Oval to sit on the chair. Hello, what? The Rav explained that, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that even a Melech, when he was an Avro, he didn't sit on his throne, it's to say he went down a little bit. That you want to show in Avelus that you're down at the dumps. So you indicate that by sitting down on the floor. Is it a real halacha? Is it a real din? No, it's not a real halacha. It's a minute during Avelus that an Avro sits on the floor. That's why some posts are tupling that the chair has to be less than 2 tfachim, because it's 1 tfachim, so it's a lot lover. So if you hold it, there's sometimes a din you have to be on the floor, then you can start talking about lover. If you hold it, it's not a din altogether. The minig is that you shouldn't be sitting in a normal chair. So my nafkamina, whether it's 10.8 inches, to 10.9 inches, 11 inches, 12 inches, if it's clear that it's not a regular chair, so it's going to be okay. That's what many people have the custom that they have a small shiva chair, with a ruler to measure it exactly more level, less level. If it's obvious, you walk to the base up and you see who's sitting on the shiva chair, those are the available. So that's okay to fulfill this minute, so many folks can say. So that idea of not sitting on a chair, so that carried over to Tisha B'Av also. That is also the minig on Tisha B'Av. But since it's only a minig, as we said before, many of them in Hagel with Tisha B'Av to only apply until Chatzos. So this is one of them, that we don't sit on chairs until Chatzos, night of Tisha B'Av, the day in the morning, but after Chatzos, and then the minig is, as we're sitting on chairs now, the minig is to be meikil, to commit sitting on chairs. The whole thing is not an absolute din, so therefore sometimes you have a situation where it's Makom Tzar or something, so clearly the person is Makom Tzar, they're not required to sit on the floor. Let's say there's a drive. I had a drive down from Kowal to here this morning. I'm not watching the chair. I'm not sitting before. Obviously, you're allowed to sit on the chair of a car. Whatever's necessary for that was never included in this minute. But under normal circumstances, if you're in a big medish, you're in the shul, you're in whatever, you can sit on the floor. You're healthy enough to sit on the floor. So the minute you throw is to sit on the floor and tuchat. Showing drives. If you wear sneakers, if you don't have any sneakers, I don't think you have a slipper. Full fast, you're afraid to drive. She gets sneakers. I don't know. Shouldn't drive. If you have mom, she has to drive. Take a lift to derech. I don't know. There is one last iser which applies particularly to shiva. This particular iser doesn't apply to the whole shiva. It only applies to the first day of shiva. Most of the dinim of shiva, just about everything else, applies to the duration of shiva. This is the one thing the Chazal spell out as Avol Yom Rishon, and that's the Isur Hanochas Tefillin. And Avol on the first day doesn't get Tefillin. Why not? So the Gemara puts the post, Ka'er Chavish Alecha, that the Tefillin is supposed to be a Ka'er, or a beauty, or an ornament, or jewelry, or something. And then Avol to wear the Tefillin at the time of Avelah, so that's not appropriate. Well, Omdash Hashayel, again, beyond the scope now, is it a Dinim Chutz Tefillin, is it a Dinim Chutz Avelah? The Torah quotes in one place, the Torah in another place, Rashi in one place, it's one way, another, it's a lot of lumdas on this, but Lamai says to this. And Avol Yom Rishon doesn't wear tefillah, but the rest of the week does, because that's not the Iker Avelos, the Iker Meriros, for the summer show, that's the Raisa Avelos, that's the Iker Meriros, so that's the time when the Avol doesn't wear tefillah. It's based on this, that we have a minig of not wearing tefillah on Tisha B'Av in the morning. Because summer show said you don't wear tefillah on the Gabri on Tisha B'Av the entire day, because Avelos, Tisha B'Av is like Avol Yom Rishon. The other Rishonim say there's no more than that in the Gemara. The Gemara just says that Kol Mashen Noi Ba'Avol Noi B'Tisha B'Av. But the Gemara never says that Tisha B'Av is the Chumrus of Avol Yom Rishon. Maybe Sicha, Rechitza, Tamas Arisha, whatever the regular dinim of the whole week of Avelos applies to Tisha B'Av, but not the Chumrus of Yom Rishon. That's the Machlokes of Rishonim. There were different practices. There were some practices who had the minig, they wore regular tefillin in the morning for Shacharis and normal on Tisha B'Av. There are others who did not wear tefillin the entire day. If there's the Rambam quotes a very strange minhag, which is very hard to understand. The Rambam quotes admitting of the Gaonim that they didn't wear tefillin shel Rosh on Tisha B'Av, but they did wear tefillin shel Yahav. Strange pshara. It's based on Te'echa Chavash Alecha. But the only thing is that for Shiva, the Avol Yom Rishon, there's no chiluk in the shel Yahav and shel Rosh. So why daf the Tisha B'Av? Whatever it is, our minig is become the standard minig today. Is that in the morning we treat it like Avol Yom Rishon in a certain sense, we say Kinnah still. We have the Chatzos, so then we So then we transform it to like regular shiva. So the regular dinim of shiva, the mitzvah of shiva don't apply. The dinim of shiva still do apply. And the hanochas tefillin, which is anyway mutter during the rest of shiva, and then we of course do put on tefillin after chazan. Oh, that's a good talk. I was going to speak. So what exactly is called Yom Rishon? This is a technical question. Where do you draw the line? What exactly is called Yom Rishon? So there was a big, big, big machlokes haposkim between the Maritats and almost everybody else about the following shaila. There is a concept in Halacha called Yom Misa Ukvura. Yom Misa Ukvura means, literally as it sounds, the day that the person died and the day that the person was buried. In the optimal world, that's what should happen. In my sense, it happened. In America, more often than not, it doesn't happen in America. But in theory, that's what should happen. It should be the Yom Misa Ukvura. So there is a unique status in Allah of Yom Misa Ukvura. According to the Rif and the Rambam, the Gaon, we mentioned before, hold that Avelus Yom Misha is Deraisa. So they happen to hold that only when it's Yom Misa Ukvura, only if it's both Yom Misa and Ukvura together, then and only then is that Avelus Deraisa. Anything, if it's just Yom Kvura alone, so even that's the first day of the calendar Shiva, that's not Deraisa. So Maritat claims that the only time there's a Ptur and Isser with Tfilin, and Yom Rishon is only with Yom Misa Kvura. It's just Yom Kvura alone, then the available Mechir to with Tfilin. And probably most Polskim, Kvura and others, disagreed with this Maritat, based on Alumdus and the Yom Rishon, their Isa, they're running enough for now. So Shah, so where does that put us on Isa? Different practices. So many have the practice that follow those who follow the Pakhna Mishnah Kvura. So in Ovel Yom Rishon, even with Yom Kvura, they would not would on Tfilin. So let's say a person dies on Monday, so if the person dies early Monday morning, the person didn't, the relatives didn't get a chance to daven yet, so then the owner of him, they're not going to put on tefillin on Monday. Then Tuesday, they won't put on Al-Siyam Rishon, even though it's, let's say, 3 o'clock in the afternoon is the Kvura. So now from 3 o'clock to the end of the day, that's called Al-Siyam Rishon, you wouldn't put on tefillin. But those who hold like the Maritat, so they would put on tefillin. As soon as the Kvura is over, the first thing they would do is go put on tefillin with a bracha according to Maritat. So should we follow this Maritat? Mishabura says no. Chayadim said yes. Chayadim says we should follow the Chumra without a bracha. He says you should put on tefillin without a bracha. So there are different minhagim in the Brois community, that's how they follow it. First thing to do is as soon as the Levi is over, even if it was the Yom Kippur and they don't put on tefillin, if it's just the Yom Kippur alone, so then the official psak there is that they do put on tefillin like the Chayadim without a bracha. Somebody told me they told us to minhag also. I don't know. I'm not that the truth, I don't know. But somebody told me that's committing a sort of unknown. And that's the sort of right after the school. I'll tell you, Maisa Shoya, it happened with me one time. I was learning in Karen Biafna, and a friend of mine's father was Nifter. A few years ago, his father was Nifter. And Nifter in Riverdale is Shabbos. And by the time they got the Oren, the Maisa, the Kvura, I think it was Monday afternoon in Eretz Yisrael. So, and the Kvura was over. It was in the winter time. The food was over, Mamash was 20 minutes before Shkia. So I remember the son, the Ovel, and the morning, he asked me, I said, what am I supposed to put on? What am I supposed to do now exactly? Am I supposed to have a mincha now? Am I supposed to be on tefillin now? What do I do? So at the time, when he asked me, I think the Chevah Kaddish had already left, and there was no rug there. I was the only one. I was the Talmud in Kerem Yavon at the time. I don't think I knew we did my tasks and everything. I just knew, Avi Yamishan doesn't put on tefillin. I learned this Allah, Avi Yamishan doesn't put on tefillin. I said, I think, you know, I don't think you put on tefillin today. Avi Yamishan, you don't put on tefillin. I said, not Milchan, yeah, but Avi Yamishan, you talk about put on tefillin. So then years later, then Machlekes, my tasks, I still not Mufchar on that tasks because the Maish Mishabur passed in that way. He says that even if you have Yom Kippur alone, you don't. But it could be that with the Minigay itself, not that way. I'm not sure. I don't know if he's found with the Minigay itself. He's going back to America. I don't know. Whatever it is. But I have to check out with the Chevah Kaddish in Yerushalayim. But the Pesach of Mishnah Berurah is against Maritat. But the Ovel, any kind of Ovel Yom Rishon doesn't do it. So if the Yom Rishon, the Ovel does do it. So unless the Shavuot Chos and the Ramban, let's say the Ovel is very agitated. He's Ovel Yom Ravi, but he can't control himself. He's crying, he's screaming, he's saved him. But then he should take off his tefillin now. That's chadash. You're supposed to be crying when you're wearing tefillin. But putting down short of that, then Avol Yom Rishon, if the Yom Rishon puts on tefillin. There is a machlokes in Rishon, what about Yom Sheni? Why should anybody think Yom Sheni is any different than any other day? So there seems to be a steering Gemara. One place the Gemara speaks about Yom Rishon being a problem, but everything else is mutter. And another place the Gemara seems to say even Yom Sheni may be a problem. So some Rishonim learned that even Yom Sheni is not allowed to get tefillin, but you say mitzvah with kula on Yom Sheni. What does that mean? So, practically speaking, I mean, da'if, you wear tefillin on Yom Sheni, not really. Because mikdash yom kulo only applies after Netachama. As we mentioned before, that we pass it only applies in the morning, and the Rishonim say based on Mishtanid, that only applies after the sunrise. So the Zman Tzom is before Netzachama. So there are some poskim who have a Chumrah that on Yom Sheni of Avela, even though the Avel is going to wear tefillin, but he shouldn't wear tefillin, shouldn't put him on until after Netzachama in order to invoke the principle of Mixiyam Chul on Yom Sheni. And other Rishonim say, there is no issue of Yom Sheni, you don't need any Heter of Mixiyam Chul. It's Heter Gomer with tefillin on Yom Sheni. My Nafkamin, it's tremendous Nafkamin. In the wintertime, all the minyanim in the wintertime before Netzachama. Netzachama in New York is 7:20 in the middle of February. So all the base avos, they daven 6:30. So everyone, all the non avelim can go to work. So according to some poskim, on the second day of avelim, that's not right. That the avos shouldn't be putting on tefillin because it's before Netzachama. So I think that the avelim is not. They don't know about it. They don't follow it. The avelim doesn't follow that. So I think that people are pretty amazed on that. But in theory, if a person really is controlling the shots, and really, he can really get a minyan after Nate, so probably the more correct thing to do is lechol day, is to wait till after Nate, in deference to those who shown him, who say that even the second day, one should wait until Mikdash of the Kula, which only kicks in at the time of Nate. Okay, we'll take a little bit of a 5-minute break now. Okay.
I just know that I've heard a chef to say you have to make sure you put the filling on
that
point.
You
can't wait until
it goes against
you. I don't know.
I gave in LA 2 years ago, summers ago.
Yeah,
some guy typed them all up. So he wrote it. He wrote me a chapter. So I realized last year I was saying it without it. Every time I kept on forgetting something, so I always felt bad. I would try to strip it in later. So I figured I might as well carry this with me. So at least I try not to forget.
After Shiva, like for the 12 months.
Hello.
Do you say, how you doing? Can you say that? What?
Right, Will, did I get the second afternoon of that?
Between the Mari Taz
and the Mishnah Berurah? In terms of putting on tefillin and a bracha, like that if you were putting... There's one afternoon if the mace dies on a Monday and then you're putting on Tuesday, according to Mari Taz, you would put on tefillin and a bracha, or you would not. Right. Right. That was one nafkmina. There was never there was the last people nafkmina about saying a bracha. Or like according to
not the only
one of the Go for like a little bit without it, but my battery's in back.
The battery's on my iPhone.
Oh.